2 weeks ago, the internet burst out of our screens and into real life, right here in Cambridge. That's because RaffleCon, the conference devoted to rolling on the floor laughing, came to town, bringing its surreal, circus-like atmosphere, and what must have been the highest ever concentration of, as organizer Christina Shee put it, people who have done crazy things on the internet. Basically, imagine all the weirdest and wittiest people you've ever encountered on message boards and in chat rooms, meeting for the first time in person.
We're out here at RaffleCon, you know, meeting other internet memes. They brought us out here to Boston, MIT. It's a really pretty city. And we're having a great time. We met Double Rainbow, Bear Vasquez, and Antoine Dodson, and Chuck Tessa, and Tron Guy even. That was really cool.
This is Michael Copper, but millions of people know him as Copper Cab. In 2010, he was getting bullied at school for having red hair. Then came the infamous South Park episode.
I saw South Park, and I was like, that's it. I'm done. They made fun of red-haired people. They were saying we had no soul. I was like, you know, I overreacted. I did, big time, like crazy big time overreacted.
Michael's referring to the video he recorded, in which he glares at a camera and says things like,
teachers have souls. I go to church. I'm a Christian. You don't know me. You're not God.
And
I got red hair, and I'm proud of it, all right? I consider ginger a very slanderous word.
And then something truly bizarre happened. Michael's moment of catharsis went viral. A rant that should have gone completely unnoticed in the flood of videos uploaded to YouTube, approximately 1 hour's worth for every minute, became a sensation literally overnight.
And the next morning, it was like 100,000 views, and I'm like, huh? No freaking way did that just happen. I was like, whoa.
By the time I met Michael, his video had been watched more than 28 million times and was quickly approaching 600,000 comments. That's an average of one comment every 2 minutes for 28 months straight. Which means that at this very moment, someone is watching Michael's video and typing what is probably a taunt about his weight. But don't be surprised if you've never heard of Michael. He's a new kind of celebrity. A meme. So, what's a meme exactly?
That's a good question.
A meme is just a...
A meme is something like...
You can look up its new dictionary meaning, but to me it's just...
It's definitely a one in a million chance. And
it's powered purely by people sharing it.
You can't really have a meme if no one else relates to it.
It's shareable pop culture content.
Part of art, a joke that just catches on and is...
Funny, I guess, or something completely ridiculous and...
People's boredom usually powers an internet meme.
So just witty statements over a funny image.
Not just told by millions, but reenacted and recreated by millions.
And in order for something to be adopted and then changed and remixed, there needs to be a recognizable portion of that. So
it sticks.
Meme has become a kind of anthropological buzzword used to describe internet phenomena, but the word actually precedes the internet. Richard Dawkins coined it in his 1976 book, The Selfish Gene. Dawkins was struggling to illustrate his theory about the similarities between culture and genetics, so he just shortened the Greek word meaning something imitated and started using it as an analogy. Ideas, in the form of memes, replicate the way that genes do, evolutionarily. True to Dawkins' original intention, knowyourmeme.com, the self-described encyclopedia of viral content, specifies that in order for something to be considered a meme, it must evolve as it is transmitted from person to person. In Michael's case, this meant spawning hundreds of response videos, including one dizzying link between old media and new. South Park's promo clip for its 14th season featured a freckly Cartman parodying Michael.
It really irritates me. People would say that red-haired people don't have souls. Because we do. We do have souls, all right?
But it's easy to wonder, amidst these glorious nerds, their mind-blowingly self-referential irony, and the academics who study it, if memes have any lasting significance. Do they really matter? Co-founder and director of the Berkman Center, Jonathan Zittrain, thinks so. He addressed the importance of memes in his keynote to RaffleCon's attendees.
The question is, what do authorities in power, who depend in part for their power on fear, on because I said so, rather than because I asked you so, and you're part of the system and you buy into it the way that Wikipedia editors buy into Wikipedia, how vulnerable is that system to the kinds of actions or even ideas that are generated with, at their heart, poke fun at things?
In fact, the first panel discussion at this year's RaffleCon was devoted to exploring this question. Tongue-in-cheekily entitled Global Lulls, it was inspired by Ethan Zuckerman's opening remarks at RaffleCon 2 in 2010, urging attendees to remember and consider that there's more internet out there than just what the U.S. produces. One guest speaker, Ann Chowmina, presented the myriad examples of how memes function as subversive political statements, despite rampant censorship in China. Another, Anas Kitesh, described the role memes continue to play in the Syrian uprising.
So, in Syria, you could not make fun of the president. You would be gone in a second, you would not be heard of. So, when you see these images, just Photoshop making fun of the president, it helps empower people. It helps give them strength. They dare go out. It helps out there. They know that they're not alone. But there are other people who are raping and they're returning home safely despite doing what they're doing.
When Syrian President Bashar al-Assad said that conspiracies are like germs that increase every moment, a germ meme emerged. Cartoonish green germs, looking a little nefarious, suddenly appeared in videos and on Facebook photos. Similarly, when the foreign minister said that they would take Europe off the map, photoshopped images surfaced of him having greedily devoured the whole continent. No one person was credited with, or punished for, the creation of these memes, because they coalesced near instantaneously. So while memes allow people to protest in relative safety, their proliferation still sends a strong message to those in power. After his presentation, I caught up with Anas, who writes for Global Voices, to hear more about the effects these memes have had in Syria.
Before the revolution, you had political cartoons that vaguely touched on topics that related to people's daily lives, the corruption, the poverty, abuse, things like that, but people could never take part in it. When the revolution came, when we had the internet, now people are participating. Memes enables everybody to be in on the joke, to be in on creating the joke. They're not just on the receiving end anymore. They are the content creators. And that is very empowering. It significantly having effect on galvanizing people and winning popular support for the revolution in Syria. When everybody is participating, even at first anonymously online, they're slowly encouraged to take more and more action. And eventually they end up going into the streets and protesting.
Rage faces invented in America have been applied with comedic juxtaposition to atrocities committed by the Syrian regime. And in Egypt, they're being used to combat sexual harassment. Some of you even started getting published in newspapers as political comics.
It's a cliche to say that it's a small world, but it really is. And things that are very simple, like rage faces, they just immediately catch on. People relate to them. They're simple to reproduce, to recreate, and they're fun. That's the most important part. They're fun. That's why they're universal. So this is huge.
So the future of internet culture is unknown, but Anas is right. It's huge, and it'll only get bigger as we come to understand and harness its latent power. Until then, though, what's so wrong with a little fun?